Chapter 4. The Dinner Napkin. The legislation creating chartered schools was born on a dinner napkin. October 3, 1988. As I mulled over this new chartering idea proposed by Albert Shanker, a subsequent presentation at the Itasca seminar captivated me. Cy Flegel, Deputy Superintendent of District 4 of New York City, was the person behind many of the exciting and dramatic changes in the East Harlem schools since 1974. In 1973, these schools were the worst in the city. By 1988, students were transferring from prominent West Manhattan schools to attend the 20 East Harlem alternative and traditional high schools. District 4 grew out of the opportunity created when the New York School District went through a terrible battle in the 1970s. This battle resulted in the New York School District's decision to create community districts. The new community board could hire its own community superintendent, and the new superintendent could remake the elementary and junior high schools in that area. The board in District 4 hired District Superintendent Anthony Alvarado. He brought in Flegel, Deborah W. Meyer, and others. Alvarado and his team created a network of small schools of choice in the community. In a March 4, 1991 issue of The Nation, Meyer described what happened in District 4. Starting in 1974, within 10 years, the new structure totally changed the way 15,000 mostly poor Latino and African American youngsters got educated without pulling the rug out from either parents or professionals. The results were drawing visitors from around the country. According to Meyer, Alvarado and his alternative schools director, Cy Flegel, gave such schools extraordinary support in the form of greater flexibility with regard to staffing, use of resources, organization of times, forms of assessment, and on-site advice and counseling. When people in the regular schools complained of favoritism, Alvarado and Flegel assured them they'd be favorites too if they had some new ideas they wanted to try. Some even accepted the challenge. In his 1988 Itasca presentation, Flegel explained things a little differently from Meyer's description in The Nation. He said, "Don't ask too much permission. That makes others take responsibility. If you want to do something different, they will be reluctant to take that risk. So they are likely to say no. Just do it. If it works, you can give them the credit." As described by Flegel, the people in District 4, principals, teachers, parents, students, no longer equated schools with real estate. For them, schools were about relationships. Small groups of teachers designed most of the schools. These groups developed a special level of energy and sense of co-ownership that made the schools stand out. Professionals had the opportunity to be more directly involved in decision-making. Also key to the success of District 4 was that the New York City School District no longer administered the schools. Instead, the local community school boards governed them. To Flegel, this combination of small schools of choice with greater school-based autonomy was a powerful one. It allowed parents and teachers to embrace new ideas, even if they couldn't convince all their colleagues or all the school's parents. As Meyer confirmed in her writing, creating a different school is possible only if teachers, parents, and students have time to agree on changes and a choice of whether they want to participate. Flegel's presentation inspired me. What he said sounded like a chartered school to me. With the passage of mandatory open enrollment in May 1988, I thought the Minnesota legislature was probably done with education reform for a while. But now something was becoming clear to me. We had only just begun. Yes, open enrollment is important because it provides public school students access to choice. But what if all the choices are the same? What good is having more access to choice if there are few choices to access? As Flegel so eloquently demonstrated in New York City's District 4, open enrollment choice was only one element necessary to generate new ideas in public education. Equally powerful was the need for autonomy by the parents, teachers, and students who wanted to try something creative and new. If these small entrepreneurial groups had to convince a whole school board or even a school principal of their creative idea, then they might have a long wait. School boards and principals have rules, regulations, and budgeting precedents that can't be broken. In fact, one of their top priorities is to uphold the rules. That's their job. Few educators question these rules. Instead, they discuss how they can do things differently within the boundaries of the rules. After all, no one wants to be criticized, and no one wants negative headlines that might result if he or she breaks a rule. But if we want to create new possibilities, if we want to create real breakthroughs in public education or in public anything, rule number one is we have to break the rules. That's a given. No one at the Itasca seminar that year was talking about blowing up the public education system and starting over. Speakers were noting that many good things were happening within the system. But what if we suspended the rules for some small groups of parents, teachers, and students who voluntarily chose to take the risk, as Shanker suggested, and try something new? Well, this seemed reasonable. No one would force the other parents and colleagues to embrace the ideas of these small groups. But if the ideas generated good results and satisfaction, district schools could use these same ideas. In that way, the small groups could become the research and development sector for public education as a whole. Here's what I and others at that seminar began to ask ourselves. Could chartered schools be that research and development sector for public education? Could chartered schools be a way of creating new choices for students and parents without turning the public school system upside down? A seminar participant put it this way. The public education system is like a large boat moving through the ocean. It is hard to change the direction of a big ocean liner. But what if we launch a small boat alongside the big boat to see what might come of a new direction? The small boat doesn't replace the big boat. It moves beside it. If good results are generated, people choose to move from the big boat to the small boat, and the small boat grows in size. Not only do we have a successful small boat meeting the needs of passengers, but the captain of the big boat may find new ways to serve his customers as well. Frankly, my head was spinning. What would this system of chartering look like? Seminar participants had only to look at the success of New York City's District 4 with its autonomous schools to know that good results could come from something like this. Could we build on Minnesota's innovative history of education reform and actually create something like chartered schools as the next logical step? An Itasca seminar is not only a great place to learn new ideas, but also a gathering of thoughtful people with whom to talk about them. This new concept of chartered schools interested more than simply me. Other attendees also sat up and took notice. That night at dinner, I sat with a dynamic group of colleagues. The discussion was fast and furious. What might a chartered school look like? How might it be created? Who would authorize it? How would the legislature react? After the dessert was taken away, a few of us hung around the dinner table to continue the discussion. Among them were Elaine Salinas, program officer of the Urban Coalition, Joe Nathan, then director of Spring Hill Regional Issues Forum, and Barbara Zahn, president of the Minnesota Parent Teacher Association, PTA. I believe a couple business people were part of the group, but I don't recall who. Our brainstorming continued to flow. Maybe it was the wine. As a legislator, I most wanted to think about what chartering legislation would look like. Ideas were flying all around me. I took out a pen, reached for a clean napkin, and jotted down the elements we would need to include in such a bill. Who goes to the chartered school? Who decides if a school gets a charter? Who holds those new chartered schools accountable? How do we ensure they are non-sectarian? How are they funded? What if they fail? What if they succeed? The legislation creating chartered schools was born on a dinner napkin.